So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Sichere dir außerdem bis zum 24. Dezember 10% Rewe Bonusguthaben auf Weihnachtssüßwaren. Nur in deiner Rewe-App. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Hello and welcome to PAX West 2018. Woo! I'm your host, Cap Bailey, editor-in-chief of US Gamer and host of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. We are in the middle of a top 25 RPG countdown, and we are on Mass Effect, oddly, one of the less celebrated entries in one of the greatest RPG series of all time. Well, we're going to change that. We are going to celebrate the original Mass Effect, a game that deserves to be celebrated. And joining me, we have a really great panel, and they're going to tell me exactly who they are, and also they're going to tell me Renegade or Paragon. So here we go.
Hello, hello. I'm Mike Williams, reviews editor of US Gamer, and I am a Paragon.
I am Austin Walker, editor-in-chief of waypoint.vice.com, and It's complicated. We'll get into why it's complicated.
Of course it's complicated
but,
with you.
Paragon.
You feel like a renegade, though.
Paragon,
I know,
so
we'll,
far.
We'll explain what happens.
I am Matthew Allen, co-host of Videogame Apocalypse, part of the Laser Time Network of podcasts. Thank you. So I like to have it both ways. I start Paragon with the first playthrough, and then I always go Renegade.
I would like to point out that both of these guys couldn't make a decision.
Paragon.
So. Yeah. Yep. Okay, I start Paragon, so I'm a basic bitch. It's fine.
And as for me, I'm a Renegade. I mean, come on.
I
mean,
see it in your eyes. I can tell.
The Renegade is the most badass character in the entire game, and, I mean, you make all of the right decisions, frankly.
But there is a more important question. Are you male Shep or femme Shep?
Well, we're going to get to that.
Okay, okay.
We're going to get to that, but let's hear from the audience. Can I get a cheer for all the Paragons in here? All right, and how about a cheer from all the Renegades?
Oh, okay. There's not more of you, you're just louder.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is very Renegade, honestly.
I was expecting to hear like a For the Horde when we did that one, to be honest with you. There it is. There it is.
We got a Krogan in the audience, folks. That's pretty cool. So Mass Effect, a game that launched an amazing series and kind of a turning point for BioWare. This game came out a month after BioWare was acquired by EA. It was kind of the end of an era, beginning of a new era, and we can boo EA, I suppose, but it was a really interesting... We went from a company that was trying to do very hardcore RPGs, and this was where they were really reaching out to the mainstream for the first time, and the reason it stood out to us, it has one of the most beloved casts in RPG history. I think it's fair to say it has a phenomenal universe. It's incredible lore. And it really stands out in your mind, doesn't it?
I would agree with that, except for Kaiden.
Oh, why you gotta do Kaiden like this?
Already.
Immediately, like the first thing you said. You could have talked about things you loved, and immediately... Yeah. Are you sure you're Paragon? Because the first thing you got to do was drag Kaiden.
I mean, I love everything but Kaiden.
Right. Which I think speaks to the quality of that game and also to the quality of those other characters. I like Kaiden. I'm actually a pro-Kaiden person, but we'll get to that. But in general, for me, like coming to play this game... I was someone who fell off of BioWare games. That's not true at all, actually. Just I fell off of the kind of old school isometric RPGs. I'd grown up playing Baldur's Gate and then went with them as they started making, as they did KOTOR, as they did Jade Empire. And so I was very... But I'd stopped playing other types of computer RPGs. And so I was very ready for this shift. But what I hadn't anticipated was how important it was in order to kind of usher in a new era of video game storytelling. It introduced a lot of things besides a really amazing world and amazing characters. It brought the kind of like Hollywood style shot reverse shot cutscenes. Yeah. The every character was voice acted and was voice acted at a very high degree of quality, even Kaiden, I'd say. And so there was something that felt like a sea change in gaming that year. I mean, it was 2007, right? Like this is such a major year for gaming, Mass Effect, BioShock, a ton of great games, and it felt like the generation was really coming into its own. I think Mass Effect has a lot to owe to the contemporary era, the contemporary era of video games has a lot to owe to Mass Effect.
I think it's funny to hear you say that this was their first foray into kind of a game for the masses, but this is a studio that had been working on Star Wars, right? but I do agree with you in a way in that this was their first time of having something that was their own, that was for the masses, that truly felt huge. Because up until this time, they were really known as, okay, they do Baldur's Gate and like D&D games, right. And then they did the Star Wars game. But this was their first chance to kind of break away. And it actually was the first in a model. They did it again with Dragon Age. Like, they were the D&D guys, and they're like, well, we're going to have our own RPG universe at this point with more of the fantasy side. So I just remember that when that came out in November of 07, just how big this felt. Like, it felt like they were starting something big. And I think part of that was they were very clear from the start this was the first in a trilogy. Like, it was always going to be a trilogy.
Right.
And that's what was so weird when it was acquired by EA. A lot of us who've been following development were like, what does this mean for the trilogy? Because the first game was, of course, a Microsoft exclusive title.
Right.
Yeah, and it came relatively early in the generation because 2006, of course, was when the PS3 and the Wii came out. The Xbox 360 had been out in early 2005. And often, at the beginning of a generation, you see the really ambitious projects. You see developers going, I got all this new technology. I'm going to do something really awesome with it. It can be pretty variable. I mean, Shadow of Mordor was a really interesting project that never really went anywhere. It was an enjoyable game. But Mass Effect was like, no, we're doing this thing. We have these HD movie-like graphics. We have arrived in a cinematic way. And speaking of cinematic, why don't we watch the launch trailer? Because I feel the need to get kind of hyped up here, right?
We face extinction. A rogue soldier leads an unstoppable force across the galaxy, and only you stand in his way. Don't you understand? You've lost everyone you know and love. Everyone, you will all die.
Let's finish this!
Is submission not preferable to extinction?
We just spotted a troop ship, and it's bleeding Geth all over the bomb site.
Can you hold them off?
There's too many! I don't think we can hold them! I'm activating the nuke!
I'm sorry, Ash. I had to make a choice.
I understand.
Want to start playing Mass Effect right now.
Right?
Like,
yeah.
Absolutely. Jump in. This Xbox 360 is telling me that right now. A few things that, like, a few things that kind of stand out to me. So, in 2004, I believe, BioWare, we were starting to see something changing with the way we appreciated consoles, and BioWare was really at the forefront of this. And that was Knights of the Old Republic was a console game for the Xbox. Yeah, it came out on PC, but it was a console game. And that was, it was a huge moment because that was the moment when PC games started to come on to consoles in a really major way. And that was the game that made BioWare, I feel like, as the company that we know it today.
Yeah, like you said you played a lot of their games prior to that. Yeah. I had actually never played a BioWare game. I had PC, but I never played a BioWare game. until Knights of the Old Republic, because I'm a big Star Wars guy.
Sure.
And that was like that was a very big moment that they brought the CRPG genre to consoles in a way that worked for a lot of people.
Totally. And I think one of the reasons that it worked for a lot of people is part of what the launch trailer we just saw sold, and also even the one of my favorite pieces of Mass Effect ephemera is the like the TV trailer for the game,
the TV commercial
for the game, which is about a fictional... It's like it's not a trailer. It's not a cutscene from the game at all, really.
No.
But it is a similar thing of like, well, do we go save the people here, or do we go save people... Or do we just commit to the mission? It's all about choice. Like, that was the thing that... If you played console RPGs, it was rare that what you were playing was something with diverging paths. Like, as someone who grew up playing lots of JRPGs and lots of console RPGs, you made choices here and there. I'm not saying that never happened. But on the computer, in games like Baldur's Gate, you were often...
Fallout, you're going often,
you know, determining the fates of characters, of locations, of you know, the setting in general. And so for something like Knights of the Old Republic, which brought that to so many more people, that was a huge part of it. Like, what do you do with Bastila? What do you do with Mission? What do you do with Karth? That was such a huge selling point, and the water cooler conversation, and I mean, I was in high school, right? So like the locker conversation, like, oh, what did you do last night? Like, that stuff was so big that I was so happy to see them pivot and make that the focal point of how they sold Mass Effect. What do you do in Vermeier? That's in the launch trailer. They spoil that.
They really
do. Because it's fine to spoil it because there's so many other great choices in the game that you can know about that when heading in and still have a great time.
I think a lot of people forget that Mass Effect 1 was an Xbox 360 exclusive.
Yeah.
And it was games like Mass Effect, a PC game from a PC developer ultimately, that had become, that had managed to transition to a more of a console thing that really propelled the Xbox 360 to success in so many ways. I ultimately loved the PS3. I thought it was a great console, but I mean, you could say that in making a custom processor, making it very hard to make games, Sony really set themselves up for failure last generation. And so in many respects, Mass Effect was kind of emblematic of why the Xbox 360 dominated the generation for so many ways.
I remember how wrong it felt to see the Mass Effect 2 box with like on the PS3. You're just like,
it was
wow,
so weird when it came out, right? Yeah, exactly. And when it, by the time Mass Effect 2 finally came out to the PS3, like they had actually turned Mass Effect 1 into a motion comic, which I always thought was a little bit disappointing because I was like, well, yeah, you can make some choices, but you should really appreciate this game, which is really completely contained, which is one thing I always really liked about it, as opposed to just, you know, a cliffhanger.
They could have done what Shenmue did, which is just put all the cinematics on a disc and ship it, because they had to go from platform to platform.
Right, yeah, totally. But they didn't. And I will say that as someone who had lots of friends who only had PS3s and who were committed to being Sony players, I was at least happy they had. They understood that, again, the choices were what was important. You have to at least give players the option to, like, create their own path and create their own story if you're going to jump from not having played Mass Effect 1 to jumping into Mass Effect 2. A good game in its own right. A very good game in its own right.
Yeah, that little interactive motion comic thing was really nice, actually. Like, for what they had to do. I mean, like, they had a limited amount of choices there.
I've never used it because I cannot... Sometimes I get in my head like, oh, I want to replay Mass Effect 2, but I can't do that without going back and playing through Mass Effect 1 first. It feels like a betrayal somehow.
So one of the biggest shifts for Mass Effect was, if you look above all those games, they're kind of pseudo-turn-based games. Mass Effect, it was an action game. Now, not in the same way that Mass Effect 2 was an action game.
Yeah.
Mass Effect 2, with its ammo and its like properly skill-based aiming, Mass Effect was still... Mass Effect 1 was still an RPG in many respects. It definitely took after games like Deus Ex, which had kind of inaugurated that particular first-person shooter-type genre. Mass Effect, of course, was a third-person genre. Like, you saw so much of BioWare's mechanics in Mass Effect and so much of its DNA in Mass Effect, but it was definitely a huge transition, and I was wondering if you guys can like talk about that a little bit.
For me, the weirdest part, but also the part I liked the most, was probably the cover system. So, like, there was that weird third-person...
Cover systems were so novel in 2007.
Oh, yeah.
They were beautiful and amazing. But at the same time, whereas Mass Effect 2 is a little bit more action-y, Mass Effect 1 was still firmly in the pause-and-play style, which allows you to, like, really sit and think, what am I going to do here? Whereas... 2 and then 3 are very much like, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. And I sort of miss that slow, methodical play that BioWare sort of lost over time.
When it seemed, while playing the Mass Effect games, I always felt that transition made a lot of sense in a thematic way, right? Mass Effect 1 is so great because you're stepping out into the universe for the first time, you're learning about all these alien species, you're moving tactically through the lore, right? You're like, all right, I got to be careful with the Geth because I don't really understand what the deal is with them and the Quarians. Like, what is their relationship actually like? And so both as a fictional, like, traveler through this universe, you're moving slowly and cautiously and uncovering information. And mechanically, you're doing the same thing. You land on a planet. You start scouting things out. You drive around with your Mako. You find one of the many exact same cookie-cutter modular bases, which I love dearly. You park, and you're like, okay, how am I going to approach the situation? And so, like, that is the version of Shepard that you are. It's the version of being a Spectre. And then as the series progresses, things get more and more fraught, and they get more and more intense. And bit by bit, like, for me as a player, I was fine with the shift towards action because, you know, in the narrative, that's what was happening. Like, I got to speed things up. I got to keep moving. I got to keep moving. But I will say that, like, when Dragon Age Origins shipped, and I was really excited that they still had a place in their hearts for that sort of turn-based, or not turn, you know, semi-turn-based tactical combat.
Right. Yeah, I felt like Mass Effect 1 was this true transition game where, in KOTOR, when you rolled up to do combat, it was pretty much dice rolls, and so you would just be flailing with your lightsaber or what have you, and either whether the animation made it look like you connected or not, it was just sort of random, right? But with Mass Effect, at least, there was a little bit of that, but it felt like, okay, if my sights are over a guy, I'm going to connect, you know? But one of the things, like, it was slower paced, and it was fiddly, and there was an elevator that took 5 minutes to go down every time because there was a loading screen. But that's sort of what made it more like an RPG, like a traditional RPG. And so I do, yes, it was great to have Mass Effect 2 kind of get rid of some of those things and streamline them, but it's great to have Mass Effect 1 to kind of mark that transition of, okay, we're going from this traditional kind of PC series, and yes, it's going to be a little clunky in some places, but, you know, Mako 35, shout out right now. Like, there were some good parts to it. You know, there was still some stuff I feel that got lost when you transitioned from 1 to 2. I missed some of those fiddly bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to make this panel, let's crap on Mass Effect 2 and 3.
No.
I think that so much that people like decided, oh, Mass Effect 2 gets celebrated a lot, and justly, but I do think that in streamlining it a ton, they really did lose the RPG soul of Mass Effect, and it's not just narrative. Mass Effect 2 has a really good narrative component to it, but it loses the mechanical side, and I always thought that was a little bit of a bummer. I would say the original Mass Effect is quite a bit more tactical.
I still enjoy Mass Effect 2 and 3, and when a series shifts like that, it's fine to be able to say, I like this for this reason, this for that reason. I just, BioWare as a whole, I sort of miss that style.
So say we all. So let's talk about the Normandy really quickly.
Oh, I love it.
That was a beautiful
home sweet
ship.
Home. Yeah.
I think the Normandy just right away basically makes Mass Effect, because that is a cool ship that you get to command. And there are not enough space games where I get to command my own cool damn ship. And if we want to talk about the difference between Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2 and 3, my favorite thing in Mass Effect, and one of my favorite things in games in general, is the moment when you land on a planet and then the door opens and you step outside. And it's all seamless. It all feels completely connected. There's no load screens like in Mass Effect 2 and 3. And that is still one of the most magical moments I have ever experienced in a game ever. It's great.
Well, it's like, what is this place? Like, that feeling again and again. People do shit talk the Mako, and I understand that it is super fiddly, and sometimes to get it up a mountain or a hill, you kind of have to just, like, throw it up there. Like, come on, like, get up there. And I get that, but there was such a joy in going from place to place and landing and figuring out, like, it's one of the only games I've ever 100%ed. I'm not that player. I'm not the player who goes and gets all of the collectibles. I've never had that impulse. Except here, I got all of the Turian insignias. I got all of the Asari, what are they? The Yes, the writing, the writing excerpts. Yes, exactly. And I did it because I just wanted to know every little bit of information in the game and every corner of all of those worlds. And sometimes you get really rewarded by doing that because you find some great little side quest that was not, you know, kind of that didn't have a marker near it in any way that you would have just never seen, or some piece of strange lore about the world and the Protheans and everything else. Because you were inquisitive, and that's not a thing that you get a lot of in games, really. Like, really having to dig for information, mm-hmm. not having it presented to you on a platter, isn't a thing that's rewarded that often. And in Mass Effect, it really is.
And let's be honest, being able to throw the Mako up like that it feels good.
I'm with you. I love it.
No, the Mako handles like a cross between a warthog and like a hydraulic car from a Dr. Dre music video.
It's ideal.
Got the bounce going on?
Yeah. Like
So Mass Effect was pretty explicitly a cross between Star Trek and Star Wars. I always thought of the storytelling a little bit as Babylon 5, but without the... did anybody here watch Babylon 5? Any Babylon 5 fans Ooh. In the house? All right, there we go. We got some people, kids of the 90s right here. If you ever watch Babylon 5, one of the things is the universe has, or the race, the humans are a newcomer race, like in Mass Effect. There are the ancient races, like the Minbari, and they all have to unite against a seeming terrifying threat.
Well, I never thought about that, and you just took it. You took my. I gotta go from this panel.
And the White Star even looks like the Normandy, and White Star is a really cool ship. The difference, of course, was, and the reason I ultimately liked Babylon 5 was that it kind of deconstructed that a little bit and like really surprised you. Where Mass Effect kind of played it straight a little bit. Ultimately, the Reapers were kind of your existential. They were actually chaotic evil.
They
were the cosmic horror, basically.
I was going to say Lovecraft is a good example.
Very Lovecraftian, yeah.
Well, like, for what it's worth, like, I'm with you that I love Babylon 5 for deconstructing that.
Yeah, Babylon 5 fan right here.
Absolutely. But what I also love is, it's a tough thing with games, and I think this conversation is ongoing right now. There's a lot of talk right now about whether or not Cyberpunk 2077 will emphasize the best parts of that genre or the worst parts of that genre, right? Like, there's that as an interesting discussion. And there's part of that discussion that says, like, well, sometimes in games, like, we can point to things that have kind of shown us not just the best version of a genre, but actually enacted and executed on the genre tropes in a way that's just, like, really not mind-blowing because it's surprising, but because it's just executed on well. And so I think about something like the conversation on Vermeer with Sovereign as being this thing that you could have found in any sci-fi novel. Like that scene is fantastic, but what makes it fantastic is that it happened in a game, and it was the first time I had a conversation like that in a game. I'd read things like that in sci-fi novels before, or in Cosmic Horror or whatever, right?
Or in, like, movies.
In movies especially. But that scene is so good because I just had never experienced anything like it in a game before. And that's worth something. Like that, even though I can say, like, oh yeah, but like in this book, this basic same thing happens, or in Babylon 5, this is the same thing. Like the fact that it brought that into gaming was so important for me as someone who wanted gaming to step forward.
Yeah, because most of the story beats in Mass Effect in the very first one are pretty straightforward. Yeah. Like, as soon as Saren pops up,
But I still cried at the end of the Saren arc, right? Like, because it's powerful and it's just so well executed.
Yeah, you mentioned the human race, and let's be honest for a second, like, the writers were not afraid to call us on our shit. So the humans are like the newcomers. The first thing they do after taking a Mass Effect relay is attack an alien race without really figuring anything out who they are.
Like, yeah, we suck.
And so then they're known for, basically this whole game, you're trying to overcome this image of like, well, humans are hotheads. You're trying to prove yourself. You're the first human specter. And so you have all this pressure just because humanity started by screwing up. The first thing they did after discovering this tech. And it's like, yeah, that would actually happen. Like, Space Force would go out there and we're going to, fuck. That's what we will do.
Yeah. That's what we're going to do when we go in space. I mean, it's similar to Babylon 5 in that respect as well, because the backstory of that is we were in a devastating war with an advanced race, and that's what happened in Mass Effect as well. It's the ultimate. It's like, first thing humans get into space, they piss somebody off.
Well, and there's something that was else cool about that is coming from so many fantasy games in which humans are positioned as neutral, just, oh yeah, they're just a blank slate. They're just what people are. Or like, you know, you get like, well, humans are adventurous, so they get a little XP bonus or something. I love that in the Mass Effect universe, humans are not the neutral, like, average species. They right. have a very specific, like you said, they're considered hotheads. They have cultural baggage. You don't ever walk into a room in that game, especially in the first game, and think, this is my room and there are aliens in it, right? You think like, okay, let me steal myself and not get into any trouble here. I don't know shit about the Hanar. I hope I don't say anything that offends somebody and I fail this quest.
Right, and that's why, like, when I played Paragon for that first time, like, that's why I played Paragon, because when you look at that cultural baggage, like, I tend to start playing by what makes sense in this world
right.
at the moment. And, like, BioWare never made a point in either direction, but it feels like Paragon... Like, the Renegade Shepherd, if that guy in first Mass Effect, you would kind of look at him and be like, oh, no, everyone was right. Everyone was right. They should really take that guy away and yeah. like, not well, give him any
power. That game does do that because the Renegade Shepherd is Saren, right?
Right.
Like, Saren is the Renegade Spectre who finds out about what's happening and does whatever he thinks is necessary to save the day. And, like, the game editorializes and says, well, here's what it costs you. It costs you everything.
Right.
Well, let's talk about the cast. Because Ooh. I would say that the core cast of Mass Effect, I mean, they're the ones we like the best, right? I mean, one of my favorite moments in Mass Effect 2 is when you're fighting through this massive, like, there's a siege and against a tower, and there's some unknown sniper, and you're going,
yeah.
what the heck is going on? And you finally get there, and, hey, it's Garrus! Yeah, hooray! I'm, like, getting back together with my old buds. Like, when you got together back together with your old buds, that's what solidified Mass Effect to
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
So I think the first question I gotta ask, and this is a very important question, male Shepherd or femme Shep? How about you, Mike?
I'm gonna disappoint everyone and say I pick male Shepherd because I'm that guy who goes into an RPG.
Was it
and
customized or preset?
Oh, no, customized.
Right?
Yeah. In a custom character creator, I will create a character that looks pre-roll. Like me.
Are there any monsters in this room who just played with generic default male Shepherd?
I did.
Oh, my God.
I admit it.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
It was an early time in my life. I was pre-woke. I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing.
I felt bad for choosing male Shep and customizing to look like me, but you're the true monster.
I tried a custom character, and the animations never quite matched up. Like, the pre-roll guy, he looked good. Like, he was a handsome guy, right?
But yes. Was
here's
he?
What I did. Here's what I'm truly.
Yeah. Was he?
Yeah.
I mean,
in that lighting.
But all right, yeah.
Close your eyes and imagine you're on the Normandy. The lights are low, and he walks in the room. Yeah.
Actually, I'm sort of a true monster. So when I played Paragon, it was always with the male Shepherd, and then when I played Renegade, I would roll Femme Shep, so she would be a badass.
Yeah. Femme Shep's great, and I absolutely have done playthroughs of the entire series as Femme Shep. It's like weird that we even say Femme Shep because it's like, oh, you know, regular Shep and then Femme Shep, right?
Yeah.
But to speak to Mike's point, you know, obviously I played lots of games in which I made characters, but it was a really beautiful game in which I could make a character who looked like me. And, you know, not exactly like me.
Yeah, close enough.
Let's say Shepard was in better shape, for instance. Let's say they didn't have beard tech that looked like a really scruffy, poorly grown-in beard, which is way worse, you know, back in 2007. But, like, and I say this, you know, with some care, like, as a black man in America in which I'm playing video games, it's rare that I get to be, like, a black action hero. And,
right.
And it was really important at that moment to be able to do that and just, like, be that character. And so I did that, and I'm not ashamed of that, but also I'm glad I also went back and played through as Femme Shep.
Femme Shep
is better in every way.
Yeah, Femme Shep was my Renegade playthrough. Whenever I do BioWare games, I always do the Paragon, like, what makes sense, and then I do the let's just kill everybody.
Oh, so you're just like us. You just wouldn't admit it to the panel. Yeah. I see how it is.
After, I'm Paragon in my heart.
Oh, sure.
I heard that. Tell to the judge.
Yeah. You know, there's one glaring omission from that cast list that I do want to call out. So that would be Jeff Joker Moreau, the pilot of...
What's amazing is There's a second act.
How do you disrespect Seth Green's star of 1993 rollerblading classic Airborne? Come on.
Hey, come on. He was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer for a couple of seasons.
Well, there's that too. But
it was amazing. Come on.
Well, it's amazing that actually there's a second absence that you didn't call out. Who's missing? Let's see if he notices. Ashley's not there.
Right. Okay.
Which is, like, I think one of the biggest conversations that we've had, you know, in the circles of games at the time was, like, do you save Kaiden or Ashley? What's your pick?
I mean, I didn't like... So I didn't like Ashley, but she was more interesting than Kaiden. So I let her live.
So, yeah, no, it's like you had two human characters, neither of whom anybody really seemed to like. Yeah. Nobody liked Kaiden, and Ashley was racist. Or at least that was...
Yep. Space was racist. Right? And yeah, I was like, racist. You know what? Yeah. You know what? I really don't like you, but at least you're interesting, so let's go.
I ultimately kept Ashley around as well. And actually, I was doing some heavy-duty role-playing because my character as a renegade was like, nope, I am representing the human species. Right. I am very pro-human, and I don't trust these aliens. They're not human. I don't know. And I had an arc in mind as I was playing through the game, or through the entire series. I was like, as time goes on and she meets these crew members and comes to trust them, her heart opens. And she totally eventually comes to accept, like, yes, it's a one big intergalactic community, but also she let the council die, and that was an embarrassing moment. But.
Boy, you guys have such good excuses. I let Ashley live just because I was trying to hit on her as my character at the time, so sorry about that.
Just out of curiosity, like, let's throw it to the audience. Who let Kaiden live? And who let Ashley live?
Wow.
All right, yeah. So Kaiden and Ashley... Was Ashley actually a space racist? Or
yes.
What? Was she?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Like, nobody's going to stand up for Ashley here.
100% space racist, but...
But, I mean, she actually played out the arc through the majority of the game. Like, she has that racist rant at the beginning, but her arc through the game is she comes to know and like the crew of the Normandy and realize by meeting minorities and other people that it's okay. Like, she's not racist anymore.
That's right. Well, and then she gets the great opportunity to undo the mistake her grandfather did by sacrificing her life on Vermont. that is what happens. That's why it's so good. It's like literally the end of her arc as I'm going to make the sacrifice to help people that my grandfather would have shot on sight means something. And
so
she gets her way out.
So what was Kaiden's thematic endpoint there?
I kind of stopped talking to him around 3/4 the way through. There was a truck in his backstory, right? Is that?
I just...
He had an old implant.
He was very sad.
Yeah.
He had cool psychic powers.
Yo, wait, is Kaiden the dude from Dashboard Confessional? Like, straight up, Kaiden, sorry.
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 We apologize.
How boring he is. I can't quite remember.
And look, it's not just, like, just to delve into Mass Effect 2, it's not just Kaiden's fault. I also thought Jacob was super boring. So.
He was also built.
Yeah.
Getting back to Joker really quickly, it was pretty cool.
Sorry.
The reason I wanted Joker on there, so Joker is, he's the voice of the ship. He's the voice of the Normandy, until the Normandy actually gets her own voice in later games.
And then he dates the voice.
And then he dates the voice, which is awesome.
What happens?
But the reason I think Joker's so important, in addition to being comic relief, and he's great, and it's actually a good role. I mean, at the time they were like, we're going to have these big voice talent, and then I think Seth Green was like the biggest name they got for that first game, but that's fine.
Keith David is actually who just narrated the launch trailer.
Please, it's not just Keith David. It's always motherfucking Keith David. You have to say it. No, but he. What was great? It was. He was a disabled character, and you know, it was one of the first in my memory representations of a disabled character who was a hero in any video game series. You know, his whole thing. He had to steer the ship because he had. I think it was like a nervous system disease or something that he couldn't. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he couldn't like walk around and participate outside, but he was the best pilot in the galaxy type thing, and that was really cool to see representation of someone who had a disability in a major video game.
So looking at the aliens, I thought they were all pretty interesting in their own way. A trope in BioWare games is they always have the cranky guy. They have the robot that wants everybody to die. They have Rex, who's just kind of a jerk. But, I mean, in fairness, Rex does have a reason for being a jerk. I would say that the genophage that good affects choice. The Krogans, probably the most interesting runner through the entire trilogy. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you guys say that?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's one of the bigger choices of the first game, and then it segues very well in with Morden across 2 and 3. So, like, it all comes together, like, really well.
Yeah, because it's one of the... I mean, you look at games that talk about difficult choices, and so often you hear with an RPG, and from BioWare as well, it's like, we have 100 years of... We have 1,000 years of lore in either direction, and you're going to make difficult choices. And it's so rare that, A, the lore is interesting to the point where I actually want to read it in the Codex. And I think the Genophage is a really interesting thing to read about because there's so much morality like coming into it, right? I mean, yeah, it's really terrible that they did this to the Krogans. Krogans are also overrunning the galaxy. And you couldn't exterminate them, so what were you going to do?
But they're overrunning the galaxy because they were positioned as a biological weapon in order to attack the Arachni, who later we learn, of course, were themselves a kind of unfair victim. Right?
Well, that's the point, though. It's like there's no hard and fast, like, this guy's evil, so obviously I'm going to stand with it. And it's not often, actually, that you see that in games. Like, so often it's like, okay, well, I mean, this is the obvious choice unless I want to be a complete jerk, right?
Right. Well, again, the thing that I actually love about the series is it also still doesn't fall into a sort of, like, both sides-ism, where what you end up doing is, I think the choice with the Genophage in the first game is so fascinating because the conversation isn't like, get over it, Rex. Or I guess if you're a renegade, maybe it is. But it's like, no, you have a real reason to be pissed here. I'm asking you to make a compromise so that we can make this larger victory. I promise you we will
address
this.
We'll get back to it.
We will get back to this. You have and that is so much better than like, well, Rex, you don't understand. They really needed to make it so that none of you can have children. They really, it was like all they could do. Like, that isn't really the, I mean, like, you can play that way. I guess you can, right? But in my, even when I play renegade, I can't do that. To Rex. I love Rex.
Then are you truly a renegade?
Well, no, and this actually gets to what I was saying, which is when I played these games, when I played them originally, I wasn't just like, I was like a, I don't know, I was 20 whatever, 22 at the time, and so I was a little asshole. I was like, I'm not just going to play Perry on a renegade, I'm going to have like a worldview. And so my first playthrough was as like a hyper-utilitarian who was breaking down decisions based on what I thought the utility they would provide for the world, which meant that sometimes I did do renegade things.
Did you let the Arachni die?
No.
I totally killed the Arachni.
Really?
Wow.
It was hard. I didn't want to do it in my heart, because I was like, well, I mean, evil alien space bugs can totally redeem themselves.
Yeah.
But I was like, nope, I'm role-playing a renegade, and this renegade who's totally a believer in the human race, she's going to kill those Arachni. They're going to die.
Yeah.
I think there's some really rich opportunities for role-playing, especially in the original Mass Effect, that I kind of wish that the rest of the series had carried through.
I will shout out one thing that the later series does well, I think the 3 actually does surprisingly well, and it's something that I don't think people pick up on, which is that they changed the way your interrupt system works. So in 1 and in 2, you made choices, you opened choices based on how many Paragon and Renegade points you had,
right.
But in 3, that doesn't happen. Instead, 3 gives you points when you do interrupts, and it opens up either Paragon or Renegade options, which enables you to be a little bit more free with what your choices are, because sometimes you're like, no, fuck this guy, I'm going to kill him right now in the middle of the conversation, and other people you want to like save and give them the benefit of the doubt, and it actually mechanically allowed you to do that. Sometimes going back to 1, I'm like, oh, I wish I could be a little more precise in that way and still unlock those options.
Well, it also makes it so you don't have time to think about your choice. You have to act spur of the moment, which is like, are you truly a renegade or are you truly a paragon? It's instinct at that point. It's like, I got to be fast. Otherwise, you will miss those interrupt moments.
Yeah, and there's probably early on, there's a little bit fewer chances to play, say, a forceful paragon or a more lax renegade.
Right.
So 3 really started...
Unfortunately, it was still not as great of a game as 1 was, right? Like, and also, it didn't give you the other thing, which is the opposite, which is like you get to that Rex choice, and you're like, well, okay, I'm gonna go to 7-Eleven. I need to think about this. I need some time. I gotta do a lap.
Well, I mean, I was like, well, Rex obviously can't die.
Right, yeah, totally.
It was obvious. Like, I read on an FAQ, it was like, how do I save Rex? Okay, like, I'm going to do that to make sure that he stays alive, because there's just no way in heck it was.
Do you, like, think about that whole sequence? Like, Vermeier is, I know you have a question that we're going to get to about what our favorite part of this game is, and I don't mean to just jump ahead. I don't. But just, we're talking about Rex, we're talking about the sequence. That entire line. From the point of landing on that planet and getting the brief of what's happening through the conversation with Sovereign at the end has so many incredible moments and so many like beats that I just hadn't seen. Like, think about when you go up to talk to Rex. Do you remember what Rex is doing when you do that?
He's freaking out.
He's shooting fish in the water. He's literally just like, boom, boom, and it's shot in this beautiful way. It's like a mid-length shot, and you can just see his whole body. He's so big, and it's like the beach is in the distance. It's like, I didn't know games could do that, and that's why it's like such an important game for me. Because otherwise, you know, 4 years prior, that would have been, you know, if that had been a Bethesda game, it would have been just like a super close up on Rex's face, right? Or if it had been
even if it had been a BioWare game, totally. Like Knights of the Old Republic, like, it would have just been a shot, and he would just been like.
And I would have loved it still, but something about Mass Effect's production value just like transports it into another realm.
Liara Tassoni, interesting character because obviously one of the most popular, one of the most critical, and she was, for better or worse, the vector through which the lens through which so many of the romantic options are seen. And this was like one of the first games where like romantic options were a thing. And it was a huge deal because if you were a female Shepard, you could date Liara. Now, of course, they made Liara, she wasn't strictly speaking one gender, right? But she, like, presented very female.
She uses she, her, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, of course, I was like, could I get your thoughts on Liara Tassoni, like, as a panel?
I mean, I really liked the character. She was part of my Shepard squad, so it was Liara and Ashley, which covered the biotic and soldier sides quite ably, but Liara was my like romantic love interest. I never like had any other like mental
you never
choice.
Broke off? You never.
I mean, in Mass Effect 2, yes.
Oh, okay.
I mean, come on, Miranda. Come on.
All right.
Look, mm-hmm. I had to be a little renegade at least.
Okay.
But
did you guys date Liara in your like playthrough?
Yes.
Yeah. Did everybody in this room date Liara?
Only because I wasn't really given excited. The option of dating Tally until the later game.
Right.
I wanted to date Tally.
My hot space insect alien, whatever the hell she is in that suit.
Yeah.
I wasn't given that option during the first game.
Tally, what the heck is going on behind the mask? We want to know.
Look at this Photoshop. You'll find out. So Liara, man, like, I really love Liara's arc. And I, like you, dated Liara in the first game. And then I dated Tali in the second game. And you get, you know, through just the regular game, but especially with the Shadow Broker DLC in 2, you end up getting this other look at Liara and how she's changed and how the story of the first game and the events of the first game have impacted her and forced her to try to do something different with her life.
Because she was like a peaceful archaeologist for the most part.
Yeah, and now
she was super naive.
Crime boss.
Right. And then a thing that I love is, so I didn't get back with Liara at 2, and going into 3, I was like, oh man, like, this is it. Am I going to make that choice and maybe like rekindle the old flame? And I didn't. And the thing that I love about Mass Effect 3, like maybe my favorite scene, one of my favorite scenes in all of Mass Effect is in 3, and it's the moment before the big final fight, and Liara comes, and you do the mind meld. You do the sorry mind meld. And that conversation was so powerful to me because of the events of Mass Effect 1 and 2, where I felt like Liara was someone who knew me in a way that goes beyond current relationship status, right? Like, I have that ex in real life who, like, I would trust with my life, even though we're not dating anymore. And the fact that BioWare managed to nail that starts with her good characterization in Mass Effect 1, and then starts with their ability to communicate her as naive and idealistic and show her become a little more cynical, a little more world-weary throughout the series.
Yeah, I feel like later Shadow Broker really solidified her for me. Like that moment when your Shepard is walking like right in tandem with them, they're both looking straight ahead, talking, and you can feel the tension
it's
crackling
so
if you were dating in the previous game. That was such an amazing moment for me. Yeah.
I felt like Liara was my second best friend on my squad always, but my first was always Garrus. Yeah. He was the best friend.
I mean, I wouldn't say he was my best friend because Garrus in the first one is like Robin. And, you know, he's like, you're so awesome. It's like, I'm going to come with you. And then in the second game, he's like, I'm going to be Batman now because you're gone. Well, and this
Nightwing.
Is all I
he
can do.
Or Archangel, I think.
It was less with Garrus. It was less of a mutual understanding in the first game and more of a, you're a really cool kid. Let's go. Let's go do some cool galaxy stuff. And
I'll
I really
tell you,
enjoyed it.
Whether or not to kill that doctor. Don't worry. I'll make the choice for you, buddy.
Well, time is a little tight, so we can't talk about the entire cast. But I would be really remiss if I didn't talk, or if we didn't talk about the sex scene in the game that set kind of the internet and cable news on fire. Let's watch it, shall we?
Oh no!
Oh no! Kids.
It's so cringy by itself, but in an entire room.
It happened on Ilos. I hope we will stop Saren, of course, but part of me fears we are already too late. There is something I must tell you, in case we fail.
We're not going to fail, I promise.
Please, I am not looking for comfort. Saren might already have the conduit. It is time to be completely honest with each other. These could be our last moments together. Our last chance to show each other how we feel. I want this to be special.
We don't have to do this. Not unless you're sure.
I have never been more sure of anything in my life. Will you join with me, Shepard? Let our bodies and minds unite.
Forget it. Just tell me what to do.
Incredible, Shepard.
Amazing.
5 minutes ETA to the Mew relay.
I had better go. Duty calls. You would not want to keep Joker waiting. Shepard, whatever happens on Ilos, I just wanted to say thank you for everything.
I want you all to look at me right now. We all just shared a moment, okay? This does not leave this room, all right? All right?
I'm going to be completely real. If that had happened to me, as soon as the black eyes thing happened, I would just be like, I'm out. I'm sorry, y'all. I got to go.
You got to let me know about that ahead of time. I'm cool with it, but just let me know. It's great. It's like, it's super cringy now. 100% is. It's hard to watch. I think the entire system is cringy to the point of parody, right? Like you see Saints Row 4, of course, parodied it completely by saying, like, well, what if you could just sleep with your crewmates immediately instead of earning enough, like, sex points or whatever, right?
Except motherfucking Keith David. He said no.
He said no, which, good for him. But at the time, it still felt like, okay, they're trying to be tasteful.
They were doing something. They were doing something.
I mean, and I can't stress enough how novel that was in 2007. I mean, we talked a lot about, like, the maturation of video games. Now, like, what that did, especially after, say, playing The Witcher and that kind of thing, you're like, oh, yeah, cool, whatever. Like, plenty of same-sex relationships. In fact, people get really mad if same-sex relationships aren't in games. And even though they, like, found a way to kind of weak a lot of it, that was more or less what they were doing. And like, just having sex in a video game felt dangerous. That's why we had the sex box scandal Fox News. It's like, oh my God, there's sex in video games. What's the world coming to? This is for kids and that kind of thing. And that was the undertone. It's like, kids are playing this.
Yeah, see, for me, it was always cringy because I was playing it with friends, like with roommates. So I was the one playing, but there were always people present. So it was one of those moments like when you're watching a movie and then there's a sex scene and you're there with your parents and you're just like, nobody look at anybody else. Let's just have this moment by ourselves.
Yeah. If anything, the cringe, that's what I would get mad when they're, oh, you know, you're playing Ass Effect on the sex box on news and stuff. And I'm like,
that's what they said.
What made me most upset, though, was like how cringy it was. I'm like, if they only saw the scene, they would know that it's just not realistic. It's just so, it's stupid. Like, they're really.
Well, it says full digital character nudity. Yeah. I mean, that's a stretch.
It was as close as they could get.
Yeah, that was full digital character nudity in The Witcher 3. We were starting down the slippery slope, as it were.
This greased the veils.
Phrasing, yeah.
So one of the things I always like to do when I'm doing the top 25 RPG countdown is I always like to talk about what are the best moments, the moments that define an RPG that deserve to be on this list. And for me, it's the entire final battle. It's the entire final act, which... it's just a phenomenal cutscene. I mean, from the moment that the Mako gets its redemption when it goes through the mass gate, the big reveal, and I love this reveal. It's an incredible reveal of how the gates were a trap all along for the Reapers to... that once humans got to a certain... or the alien races got to a certain point, the Reapers take it over, turn their technology against them, and isolate them and destroy them one by one. That was a great moment. The moment when you're outside the Citadel
incredible.
And you're running along in zero gravity, that was amazing.
With
and then, of course...
Sovereign at the end, you're like running down the towards Citadel, and Sovereign is like looking up at you. Oh, it's so good.
The huge space battle that erupts all around you, the moment when you have to decide whether the console level dies, which is a big moment that sums up all of the themes that have been happening in Mass Effect. And most importantly... when you get Saren to shoot himself in the head.
Oh, poor Saren.
Saren has been the villain the entire game. He's a big villain. He's a great villain. He's like your evil side. He's a specter. He's one step ahead of you the entire time. You're trying to figure out how to beat him. And it's so gratifying. It's a throwback to, say, Fallout, where instead of just fighting him, you go, no, you're a soldier. You've betrayed everything. You know what you got to do. And he goes... yes. And it's like I said, it's cheesy, but I mean, did they have like that kind of moment really in later games in the series? I don't really think so.
I don't think so. What I'll say is they call back to that moment really effectively in the, what is the name of the Kasumi DLC? Is it just the Kasumi DLC in Mass Effect 2?
Yeah.
Stolen Memories, where, you know, Stolen Memories is a great little heist level, right?
Right.
And there's this moment when you go into the basement of this kind of mansion you're robbing, and this kind of criminal has stolen all this art from around the galaxy over years. And when you kind of go through there's an entryway, there's just a statue of Saren, and just, you know, you make eye contact with this with the statue, and... it makes it doesn't look back at you. It's a statue. But there is this moment of just like, oh, Saren has a weight on me. And that, again, speaks to how good Saren was in the first game.
Yeah, and especially in those later games where if you were playing, even if you were playing Paragon, you were still a little bit more forceful than you were in that very first game. So there was always that moment like at least even for Paragon, like, am I becoming more like Saren? If you were Renegade, yes, you were already
actually,
from the first game.
So what are your favorite moments? I'm going to throw it to the panel now. I'm going to start with Matt.
So we've already mentioned, like, one of the kind of defining moments is that moment where you have to talk Rex down, where you roll up on him, and yeah, I was like you. I kind of cheated, and I was like, okay, how do I keep Rex in my party? Because you are just trying to talk a man off a ledge, right? So I think that's the one that I remember most from that game. But I will say... there are so many little moments, and the reason I love this game and this series is pretty high on the spectrum of like hard sci-fi, where they actually have thought out the science other than the Mass Effect tech itself, which is sort of like the big lie that the whole thing is based on. But do you guys remember the alien species, the Elcor? They're the ones that they have to preface everything they say with their emotion, because in their race, everything they do, the movements and their speech, it's so subtle that they pick up on it, but we don't have the ability to pick up on the subtleties, so they have to be obvious about things. So to me, the fact that someone thought that out, like thought out how they communicate and then thought out a way for them to portray like their emotion, that is just a perfect example of like why as a series, like this is one of the true like big space operas to me, is like they've thought out the backstory, they thought out the universe and the world. And that's to me the one of the most memorable things about Mass Effect, is it's sort of this universe I want to live in because it's plausible, you know, other than the one thing, the Mass Effect tech, you know.
Right. I already said mine is definitely the Sovereign conversation, which was this amazing, like, just bomb of information and lore.
It was freaky.
And freaky, yeah, totally. And, like, scary. Like, actually was frightening to
phenomenal
have.
Phenomenal use of sound effects. Sorry, I won't keep interrupting.
No,
but
please.
It really stands out. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I think that part of it is so much of Mass Effect works because, specifically Mass Effect 1, because you feel so small in the face of the galaxy. And, like, by the time you get to Vermeier, you've done a few of the other planets. And so you're like, I got my footing about me. I understand how to be on a spaceship. And then Sovereign's like, no, you don't understand anything. You're so small. And Sovereign's right. Like, you are so small. And it kind of sets the stakes for everything else. Second best is just all of Novaria because it feels like a cool, weird, like cyberpunk espionage story.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best things Mass Effect does too, is it has, because of the breadth of that first game and all of the different worlds you visit, it can kind of pivot between types of science fiction. Sometimes it feels like cyberpunk, sometimes it feels like space opera, sometimes it feels really campy and goofy. And because of the breadth and because you actually go to all these places, it manages to pull that off without feeling inconsistent.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the reveal that Sovereign, like, it's not just a ship. Like, for me, that was like, oh, that's a really cool ship. And then it's like, well, the ship might have mind control. Oh, that ship is an actual thing. That's the bad guy. What? I remember, like, I put down the controller, and my friend had to pick it up because I was around the room. I was like, it's the bad guy. And I'm, like, walking around, you know, like, oh.
So it makes your second playthrough great, too, because you go to Eden Prime, and you see it again. And you're like, oh, it was always right there.
Yeah. I had one moment I forgot. You were going to have me defend the Mako. And there was a single moment when driving the Mako on the moon, cresting over the edge of a crater and seeing the Earth from the moon. That is why I love the Mako. Good. And that to me was the epitome of like exploration. And the fact that it's exploration in our home turf, like the moon and Earth. But that to me was like the biggest moment of, oh my God, I'm playing like this real big space opera and I feel small seeing the Earth from the moon, of all things.
Do you remember getting that call in the game where they're like, some shit's going down on the moon? Like, what do you mean the moon?
Which,
like,
moon?
No, yeah, the moon.
Moon. Our moon. Like, what?
What? I'm going to the moon? Okay. There's space whales on the moon also, apparently.
It's weird.
The writing in that game was really great, often, especially when Joker and such were talking.
And it was fun. It was so fun.
Yeah. I think the Mako was, to your point, like emblematic of the spirit of exploration and the ambition. Like, this game truly was a space opera. You were like exploring the stars in your ship. You were out there, and it's rare to find a game that really puts you in the moment in the way that Mass Effect does. So, I suppose that's why, for me, like, that's why Mass Effect stands heads and shoulders over so many other games, and why it deserves to be on this list is it was messy, but it was huge. It was ambitious. It told a great story, a great self-contained story. It had a pitch-perfect cast, a great finale. It tried so many interesting things. It was very much in touch with BioWare's roots. Yeah, maybe you could say the combat felt janky compared to Mass Effect 2, and you could talk about all day about whether or not it's a good idea to take agency out of the hands of the players in terms of whether or not your stats impact things, but I'm playing a friggin' RPG. I want my stats to impact things. I'm just saying. So, guys, like, final thoughts.
I mean, my final thought is a lot of people at the very end of everything with Mass Effect 3, people were disappointed by the ending, and part of that disappointment was that Mass Effect 1 was such a great first step. Like, just into the world, into the characters, the Quarian, the Elcor, the Turians, and the cast. It was just such an amazing first step. And it's kind of surprising, like, looking back, that it all came together as well as it did. Because, yes, they were building on a lot of the stuff that they did with Knights of the Old Republic. but they were also sort of blazing a trail on their own because they were introducing the player to an entire new world, whereas with Star Wars, a lot of that stuff is already built in. There's a sort of understanding of the Force, of lightsabers and all that stuff. So, like, Mass Effect had to sit from the ground up and say, here's all of the races, here's the world that you inhabit, and it worked. It worked
totally
so well.
I keep coming back to that specific feeling and thought when I think about RPGs in general in this moment. I didn't love Mass Effect Andromeda, but even if you told me there was going to be a Mass Effect 4 with the number 4, if I heard that there was a Fallout 5 coming, if I heard that there was a KOTOR 3 coming, I'd be excited, but I wouldn't be as excited as I was, or as I would be for something that convinced me that there was a new world to explore, a new setting with new lore, with new characters, right, with a new entire feeling. Because that's what I don't want to play a sequel to Mass Effect at this point. I want to play something that made me feel like Mass Effect made me feel the first time I booted it up. And that's something RPGs can do. It's one of the reasons why RPGs are great, is because as a genre, they lean into excess. They lean into world building. They lean into character. And so many other games that are great. I love action games. I love all sorts of games. But there just isn't the right economy of time there. I want to go into something like a Mass Effect and say, like, I'm going to be here for 50, 60 hours. Mm-hmm. I want to immerse myself in this, and I want there to be something where I get why that this is such a rare thing. It's expensive to create an entire new world and all new species and planets and ideas, but there's nothing
sometimes
like it.
And sometimes it just doesn't work.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So Austin, you mentioned earlier, like, this is one of the few franchises that I took the time to collect everything and read all the backstory and the lore. I read the tie-in novels,
right,
for crying
same
out loud, right? And for me, it's just a great example of this is. It's one of the greatest RPGs of all time. It's probably the best science fiction series created as a video game first of all time. Like, I'll go out on a limb and say that. Part of that, I have one kind of closing thought there, is it has to do a lot to do with the music.
Yeah.
Just the Mass Effect music, which I wrote their names down just so I could give them credit. So it was co-composed by Sam Hulick and Jack Wall. Like, that was a big part of kind of setting up, like, every time you booted up the game, it was just synth, like, oh, no.
When you see the text, I'm always a sucker for anything that starts with text telling me, like, setting up the background with do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, like...
Those synths when you're going to get the bombs on Eden Prime that are just like the... It's like, yes, it's so good.
It had this, like... Because space is a dangerous place, right? So there was this tension. Even listening to the main, like, menu music, I felt this, like, tension and like, yeah... Things could, in any minute, could go wrong. This spaceship could explode, and I'd be out in the cold death of
and
space.
And it does. Yeah.
Wait, what happened in the second game?
Don't worry. We'll get there one day. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
But that's for Mass Effect 2. And we have time for a couple questions, so if you want to come and ask a question for the panel, there's a microphone over there. So come on up.
No!
He just, like, straight up walked out.
It's like, it's time for a question. No, I'm walking out.
Mass Effect 1, really different from the rest, is how lonely it feels. And how, like, there's almost like a horror element with, like, the Reapers and not knowing what that is. So do you think that in your first time playing, did you feel like that it was like a daunting, like, task? Like, did you think that the atmosphere was a bit more, like, hostile than your average RPG?
I'm going to say yes, at least going into that probably final fight, I had the feeling, I was like, they're probably going to kill off Shepard. I really thought they were, like, in that game.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, yeah, I think so, definitely. So many of the main missions had callbacks to kind of classic sci-fi horror. Exactly, all that stuff. And so, totally.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons it might maybe felt more lonely to me is that first game, they were very clear. It's all about choice and you as the player and the choice you're making. Whereas the second and third game became more about the team and, you know, it was getting the band back together and stuff. So, yeah, I definitely felt, like I said, I felt tension during the main menu just loading the game up, right? And so, at any minute, it felt like anything bad, like something bad could happen. So, agreed.
Thanks for your question.
Thank you.
One more.
One of my favorite things in the game is that there's so much content that you will miss every time, no matter how you play. Like, you'll only see the Talitha side quest if you're a colonist and you go back to the Citadel, stuff like that. Do you think min-maxing hurts your experience, or do you get a better experience by just playing through and letting your mistakes play out? Like, if you get to Vermeier and there's no way to save Rex, if you didn't get his armor and you weren't ready to talk him down and Ashley shoots him in the back of the head, that kind of stuff.
I do min-maxing him because I play MMOs and some other games, but in Mass Effect, it was never one of those things where I would go and min-max like on purpose. So I can see what you're saying. Like, a lot of people, like, if you were to build your character in a certain way, you would definitely miss that. But I think for most people, that first playthrough isn't trying to find a specific experience. It's just letting the experience happen to you because of the choices that you made.
Yeah, I'm a soft min-maxer, which is like, I know that the main plot planets are going to have big, like, Paragon Renegade checks in terms of what your score is, so I'm going to do all the side stuff I can do before I go to those main ones, and Mass Effect 2 punished me for that, so...
Yeah, I definitely think on my first playthrough, I want to see everything, and I think the Paragon playthrough kind of lets you do that a lot of the time, whereas the Renegade playthrough, that tends to be my shortcut when I say, okay, I've already seen most of the game, and so... Props to BioWare for developing a game with so much content you can miss, you know, similar to like Witcher 3. You can miss hours and hours of content that they spent millions of dollars on. So, okay.
All right, everybody, that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.